Well, it's a dynamic duo, we'll be back again. Nothing back with DJ, you better pack it in. You're lacking sense, trying to tangle with us. Go with the big black bullies in the back of the bus. Just smacking you up, and stealing your lunch money. You're such a buddy, you're feeling just a touch. Only by the end of the day, that's understandable. What can I say, you got strong man to be.
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
I'm going to press run before I make a joke. Not playing around, a little bit like India were with England. Not fucking around at all.
What sport is that in?
That's right. Well, I'm pretty sure it's not in the Euro, unless
is
the
it
Indian
squash, maybe?
Premier League has really spread its tentacles.
Well, they have been trying to make an Indian soccer league a thing, and it's not really.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's not really working. I mean, it's been a bit like it's been sort of the end point for a whole lot of washed stars. But Saudi and Qatar have kind of swamped them in terms of money.
Yeah, I was going to say the disdain with which the 12-year-old in my house speaks of the Saudi league without any input from me at all. But he was like, what? Why would Ronaldo go to the Saudi league just for that much money? Why wouldn't he go and help Everton? And I'm just cracking up laughing. Everton could probably use the help. That's
hilarious.
True.
That's oh, well, A, he knows he's not Premier League quality anymore. And B, yeah, he is the most vain human being on the face of the fucking planet. I include the previous and next president of the United States. Mm. He is the you look up narcissist in the dictionary, and there used to be a picture of him, but he's already cut it out because he wants to put it on his mirror. His ego, it knows no bounds, and earning ridiculous amounts of money to be the most important person in Saudi, even though everyone who's gone through an experience has discovered, hey, it actually fucking sucks here. And there's been guys like Benzema who are like, I really want to come home. This is fucked. I'm stuck in a contract. You know, my passport may or may not be available to me. I'm not that, you know, I don't want to be here. But Ronaldo is still here. Still fucking flouncing and you know, chucking his hands up and all this kind of nonsense.
Talking to one of the touch guys who's a physio for Hong Kong Sevens, and, you know, he was saying just the like the mental hurdle of knowing that you have to, like, you're a good Islander boy and you have to apply for a passport to come home and see your family. Yeah, I apply for a visa because to play for Hong Kong, China in the Sevens, you've got to renounce your citizenship.
And no,
he said, yeah, it's a real gut check point, right? How much are you willing to sacrifice for your career? And a lot of them are like, not that.
No. And there must be other places you can play that don't involve playing fucking Hong Kong in Sevens, because that's not exactly a pathway to – you wouldn't call it a pathway to the top. It's sort of a pathway to the lower middle.
Yeah, that's right.
And if anybody knows how to get to the lower middle, it is the Bulls podcast, because that's basically where
– that's where we live.
That's where we aspire to reach the lower middle of the podcast rankings. We are the English game plan of podcasts.
That's a bit rough.
I saw the English fans just wailing and moaning and gnashing teeth about the fact that, you know, their team doesn't appear to have a plan and have played some terrible nil-all football in order to top their group. They have topped a group in a European Championships. This, you know, and nobody ever looks good at this point of a tournament. And if they do, don't trust them, because they're probably going to fuck up. Like, this was always the Spain trick, was to look tremendous in the group stage and then go out in the round of 16 to fucking Morocco or Russia or some randos. Back old school Spain, like pre 2008 Spain. So, and what have we got now? We've got Spain, comfortably the best looking team in terms of the way they're playing football. I'm just waiting for them to trip over their own dick in the round of 16. It would not be surprising at all if they did that.
Those giant killers, Georgia, are just sitting there waiting.
Yeah, they got Kavara out here, Kavara Donna, which is pissing off a lot of people if you use that nickname. But he's actually had a pretty shit season, because he was fucking tremendous for Napoli. This is Kvaratskhelia, the Georgia number 7, who was basically underpinned Napoli's run to the Scudetto in Serie A season before this one. really, really, really good old school creative winger, like something from the 90s. Fucking awesome to watch. And Napoli had a bad year because their coach fucked off to coach Italy, and half their players were kind of in contract disputes, and the owner is a genuine fucking mentalist. He is just a fucking a real piece of work. So that they'd lost the plot a little bit, but they seem to be getting their wheels back under them. But Kvaratskhelia scored that fantastic opener, which set them on their way to get past Portugal. And Portugal obviously were changed and didn't really care anywhere near as much as Georgia did. But that was fucking tremendous football.
It would have been funny if Ronaldo had got suspended for the next, because you do get suspended for a red card, don't you? You miss a game.
Well, two yellows will get you suspended.
Yeah, so I was like, that would have been hilarious if he pouted his way to missing the round of 16 game and then they went straight out.
It would do Portugal a massive favour because they don't feel that you shouldn't be starting Ronaldo at this stage of his career. He should be an impact sub. But he doesn't believe he should be an impact sub. Therefore, the coach can't believe that he should be an impact sub, because the whole fucking – you can't ask Cristiano Ronaldo to be an impact sub unless he came up with the idea himself. So they're going to be stuck starting him in every fucking game until it bites them in the ass. And it's worth remembering that the only trophy Portugal have ever won was the 2016 Euros, which they won with Ronaldo on the bench on crutches shouting at people. That might be his best position.
So the flip side of being awesome in the round games and then shitting it in the round of 16, does that mean Italy have a chance that they might actually just come good? Is there sides that have played terribly in the round and then come good once the pressure gets put on?
Well, Italy, any time they've ever done anything, have been basically that. But this is the thing with Italy, and I was seeing a lot of the same kind of dialogue around the way Italy were playing and the way England were playing. Because Italy made it through on a bullshit fucking 98th minute wonder goal that got them a draw against Croatia, which therefore meant they went through second in the group behind Spain. The difference between – I mean, following Italy I think is actually worse than following England, because England have no plan, but they have so much talent, and basically that is the plan, is that you just roll the talent out and see what happens. That seems to be the Southgate approach for this year. With Italy, you don't have the talent, but you do have a plan. The problem with the plan is to win nil all with zero shots on goal and zero XG. That's the plan. That's the aim. That is peak Italian football, is to somehow win nil nil. And the biggest problem they have is that they used to be able to get away with this when they had talent. They don't have world-beating talent anymore. I was trying to think, if they were making one of those legendary Nike pre-tournament ads like they used to do, the cage or the fighting with the demons in the stadium.
Or
the entire Brazilian team at the airport and all that kind of shit. What Italian player would be in that ad? And the only one you can come up with is maybe Donnarumma, the goalkeeper. Because there's no Pirlo, there's no Cannavaro, there's no Maldini, there's no none of those guys like underpinned the 2006 World Cup team. There's no top level superstar footballer who plays with an Italian passport anymore.
Is he a club star as well? Because he's genuinely looked like the only thing keeping them in the tournament.
Well, he's been at PSG for a few years, and you kind of get lost a bit at PSG. You know, if you don't win the French league, then you're a joke. And then all they ever do is fuck up and never achieve anything in Europe. So he's a bit forgotten. And he came up playing for Milan, my club. And of course, when he left, he was, you know, he's roundly disliked by the Italian supporter base because they feel like he took the money and fucked off. His nickname in Italian circles is Dollarumma. And often they sort of, you know, when PSG came back to play Milan in the group stage of the Champions League, I think they were throwing fake cash at him from the stands. You know, welcome home, cunt. You know, have some fucking Monopoly money, because that seems to be how you operate.
Yeah. He's been I've been rooting for teams that Italy have been playing against to play attacking football just so I can watch him work.
Well, they get Switzerland. The very first game of the second round is Switzerland-Italy. Basically, tomorrow, in the middle of the night, basically it will have been played by the time this recording reaches your ears. And Switzerland are a very good football side. They have been a very good football side for several cycles. It feels like this same team has been around for 15 years, but they haven't. It's just that they've just been really well stuck together, played really good football, Their talent is, I'll be surprised. You could argue their talent is better than Italy's. I mean, they have guys who, like, their keeper is the starting keeper for the Serie A champions. Their centre back is the starting centre back for Man City. They got, their captain holding midfielder is the captain of the German champions. You know, they've got massive amounts of talent all the way through that team. And Italy have got a bunch of dudes who play Serie A, which is now fourth out of the top five leagues, I suppose, in terms of talent.
So Germany sort of had a little bit of a stutter. Spain still seems to be the favourite. Is that?
Yeah, they get accused of that. But I think Germany played as well as Switzerland let them. I think everyone sort of overreacted to Germany beating the shit out of some pretty average the first two opponents. And then they got a actual good team, well-structured, talented, organised team with a bit of ability and go forward. And, you know, that was the first actual kick in the ass they got.
Yeah. And really, you want that before a knockout stage anyway, don't you? You don't want to just cruise through and then have to lift up, you know.
But you don't want the ass kickings to be kind of constant and permanent and repetitive right through the group stage, and then you don't learn anything from them, like Italy or even England. I mean, England haven't really played anyone and still look terrible. Mm.
Yeah, because we've got in our draw, we've got our first two games. Our first two hardest games on paper are the first two games. And then potentially the last game could be tricky. And, like, I'm hoping that the USA are at least competent, if not good, because I don't sort of want to just, you know, slowly be playing worse and worse teams going in then into a knockout game against someone that's actually going to be pretty good.
But you also want them to be bad enough that you win.
Yeah, we also don't want to lose.
You want to save the difficult game for the last round. Unless, of course, you come up against, like Georgia did. They came up against a Portugal team that were already on the beach won it on the beach, but they were already in the next round, so that their heads weren't in the game that they were playing. Mm. Although you can have that. Even, you know, Spain changed their entire team apart from one player who needed minutes, and they still won 1-0 in their final game. So, you know, talent will out. But so the round of 16 games, Switzerland play Italy on Sunday morning, and then the breakfast game is Germany-Denmark, which is another game that Germany will be – that's another organised, structured team. Nowhere near as talented as Switzerland, but the Danes will have been watching what the Swiss did to them, and it's going to be interesting to see what Germany have learned. And then on Monday morning, we have the England-Slovakia game is the quote-unquote early one, which is 2 a.m. Australian time. The first game that you'll catch up with next morning.
Yep.
Slovakia are very good, but neither the way England have played, neither have England. England will need to just kind of figure this shit out, I think. There's every fucking theory and suggestion in the book that's being thrown at Southgate. Do this, do that, don't start this guy, start that guy. And it's just, you've got overwhelming amounts of talent. Just get out of the fucking way. That seems to be the way I would put them. Play them where their fucking coaches play them at club level. Get out the way. I think that'll probably work.
Yeah.
And then the other game on Monday is Spain-Georgia, which I think is the end for the Georgian experiment, unless Spain really do trip over their own dicks and try to over-elaborate stuff. And they don't do that stuff anymore. They don't ticky-tacker themselves to death like they used to. That was pretty much how they lost to Russia in the Russian World Cup. Is that they just had endless, pointless, possessive passing and just wasted their own, you know, just tied themselves out, punched themselves to a standstill.
It doesn't seem like, from the games that I've watched, it doesn't seem like teams are, not many teams are overusing it. It's like as soon as there seems to be an opening, even if it's a little bit ill-advised, teams are mostly like patient, gap, go.
Yeah, there isn't as much struggle ball.
Stylistically, some of them do it in different ways, right? Like Spain seems to like to – the gap can be 35 metres away from the goal and they'll have a crack. But it doesn't seem like people are just – there doesn't seem to be any ultra-conservative team in this tournament. Am I wrong on that?
Well, if they are, it's England because they are
– Yeah, and I haven't watched very much of them.
They are the team that's closest to playing what is – often referred to by analytics and tactics people as COVID struggle ball, which was when COVID came around and players were much more tired. What you saw is teams gravitated towards slowing it down and using possession not as an attacking tool but as a defensive tool. Like if I've got the ball, you can't score a goal with it. So they'd have all this kind of pointless possession, not intricate build-up passing like the tiki-taka model, but it was just keep the ball, be really slow and try and pick and pass your way through the opposition. And I saw a Opta graph of teams being plotted on the basis of the speed of build-up play. And England were right down the bottom. They really are a slow team, a slow, deliberate, short-passing team. Which is why they look the way they look. But that feels like it's kind of built for it. And to be fair, some of that is against, you know, if you're playing against a whole bunch of teams that have set up to park the bus in front of you, you don't really have a lot of choices. And they're not going to have anything other than that with Slovakia in the round of 16, or if they see Italy again in the second round, the quarterfinals. But Spain and Germany, I don't think we're going to see that. Although Germany are on the slower side in terms of their build-up. Spain and Germany would be the quarterfinal if they both win through. And that feels like too good a game to be a quarterfinal. But knowing that, with that kind of luck, you know, both of them start thinking too far ahead to the next round, then neither of them make through the round of 16.
It doesn't seem like you're going to have a quarterfinal. And again, I am an absolute numpty with this stuff. But it doesn't seem like the way the teams have been playing, you're going to have a two-tier quarterfinal where you go, oh, well, these teams are obviously better than these teams. It seems like even the underdogs are an underdog with a decent chance if they play their best football on the day.
Well, they got here for a reason. Yeah. They got here because they did something really, really fucking cool at some point.
So that was the other question I had to ask.
Slovenia, who were in Portugal's semi, round of 16 game, they got through because they were in a group with England. England were fucking horrible.
Would it really take that much longer to have an even draw, have the extra teams? Like, it just... The third.
What do you mean by an even draw? You mean like a 32 team comp?
Yeah, so that you're not getting some third place teams and not others. Just, I don't know, just...
Yeah, but, I mean, there aren't too many... I think they've got it about right in this tournament, because the only team that probably should be here that isn't here is Ukraine. They were unlucky because they were in that group where everyone was good.
Yeah.
But the other third place team was Croatia, and they were no good.
Yeah, they were pretty rough. Fair enough.
And it's, I mean, half of them are going home at the end of this week anyway. So let's, you know, by like mid this week, you know, half of them will have gone home, and then, you know, this is the sorting process. So Tuesday's games are Portugal-Slovenia and France-Belgium, which is a big game on paper, but neither France nor Belgium have really been firing. They have definitely started slow. I mean, France are desperately dependent on Mbappe, who had his face mask on. He looked kind of Rip Hamilton Mbappe.
Yeah.
And he got a goal that was really important in that game, but it still depends so much on him, which is a problem. And Belgium just got fucking booed when they... in their 0-0. Again, they topped a group and they got the... Actually, did they top? No, they didn't top the group.
That was a bit weird where their captain was like, well, let's go down and see our supporters.
Let's go and acknowledge our fans. And he starts to go, they're throwing things. And like, I was thinking, though, it's a bit like, what was that?
Yeah, let's go and stretch.
It's a bit like fucking Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And they're saying, let's go to Camelot, to Camelot. And they sing all this stupid song about Camelot. And they go, second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place. And it feels like he looked over there and went, let's not do that. Let's go over here. And the biggest problem with Belgium got booed off, essentially. They had the Tintin get up. But they didn't go full Tintin. They had these white socks. They should have had brown socks to make it look like he was wearing slacks.
Yeah.
My culture is not your costume. The final round of 16 games are Romania, Netherlands, and Austria, Turkey, which is how we're meant to pronounce it now.
So could Netherlands be that dark horse come good in the round of 16?
I think they are a good side. And they might be like the fourth favourite. So I wouldn't say they're dark horse. I would say, you know, with that team and that talent, they should be the team that makes it through that side of the draw to the semi-final. So out of Romania, Netherlands, Austria and Turkey, you say the Dutch would be the team that gets through to the semi-final against either England, Slovakia, Switzerland, Italy.
Yep.
So they could see England or they could see England or Italy or Switzerland in the in that semi. So this is why that side of the draw is being accused of being a little bit soft. But I don't know. I mean, France and Belgium haven't played particularly good football. Portugal are one Ronaldo strop away from the team imploding. Germany couldn't figure out the Swiss. And Spain are still, you know, very capable of doing a Spain.
So it's pretty open.
It is the Western Conference. One day we'll get to the end and realize that none of these teams are actually in. We can't work out whether it's parity or mediocrity, but one way or another, these teams are going to beat the shit out of each other on their way.
Well, speaking of the Western Conference,
segue.
The draft was a fascinating, I think it was Streaky who said, 10 of the Eastern Conference sides are just there simply to be mined for a Western Conference side that needs to boost its, you know, boost itself up in the standings.
Which is the sort of thing you say when you're a fan of a Western Conference team and you're trying to get over the fact that the Eastern Conference are going to win the next three titles.
Possibly. I don't know. That Celtics team's going to get pretty damn like,
I don't think they care.
No.
And they're not as expensive as the fucking Knicks, who have already managed to hard cap themselves by trading for, like, but not trading for, horrendously overpaying for Mikal Bridges with more, like, 1,000 picks. 1,000 unprotected first round picks for Mikal Bridges because friendship is rare. Do you know what I'm saying, buddy? Friendship is rare. Fucking, this is just, we're gonna look back on this and go, what the literal fuck? I mean, Rudy Gobert going for all those picks actually seems like
quaint.
Defensible. Mikal fucking Bridges, sure. Man. He's never been an all-star in the Eastern Conference.
Sean Marks has done. Sean about Marks as is a well god. He could have.
Sean with, Marks is New Zealander of the year.
With what?
How the fuck has he done this?
Well, because not only did he get out of all the bullshit that he had to do for Harden.
No, hang on. Like only did he get out of the bullshit that dated back to Bobby Marks and fucking trading for, you know, KG and Paul Pierce, he got them out of that. Yeah. He got them into the KD business, and then he got them out of all the shit that the KD business created. He is. Broad. Like, he can't keep getting away with this. How is he doing this?
Well, now they've got a chance. Like, they reckon the next two drafts are going to be really, really good. Yeah. So, even if he doesn't get the first pick, the sixth pick in the next draft might be better than any of the top 10 picks that just in the draft that just went down. And to get your own destiny back. And yeah. I was wondering whether this is going to start a new trend where...
Do we need to explain what happened there? Because, I mean, not everybody knows what the fuck we're going on about. Basically, Brooklyn traded to get back the picks that it sent out in various previous trades. So it means that if they play horrible basketball for the next 2 years, then they know they'll get a really good draft pick because their picks don't belong to somebody else.
But then the team that they traded with is also making that play because the Rockets are basically going, well, we'll have the Suns' picks in case Devin Booker wants out. And the Suns are like, well, if we're going to suck, we need our picks back.
Yeah, they just keep dangling them. And I hope that basically Matt Ishby is saying, no, you know, with all the confidence that led him to say that 26 other teams want their roster, is that KD's never leaving. And it's like, well, I don't know about that. I don't know who in the NBA sphere was saying it, but someone relatively well connected was saying that the Suns front office would do anything to get out from under KD's contract.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow.
Because they're fucked. They are absolutely fucked. They are going to be a really expensive shit team because KD is old. It's not KD's fault, but he's old and he takes up a lot of space in the you know, I'll probably point more at Bradley Beal or Devin Booker because Devin Booker's been really unimpressive. Devin Booker hasn't been much better than Mikal Bridges. It would be better off trading for him.
Beal in particular, like to give that much of your cap space to someone that productive.
Yeah, but I mean that's Ted Leonsis's fault. That's fucking the Wizards' fault.
Well, because of all the stuff we said about Bridges, I think Bridges and there's Bridges and someone else on the Knicks that are still worth less than Bradley Beal. I think it was Bridges and Brunson. Bridges and Brunson's contracts combined next year are less than Bradley Beal.
I would make a modification of Shricky Shooter's comment. I think the Eastern Conference exists to give ridiculous overpays to players who will then eventually have to be picked up by Western Conference teams.
Yeah. So the other one that I thought was fascinating was the Spurs getting dissed for trading the eighth pick, like kicking that eighth pick down the road.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of Spurs dissing about that. I thought most of what I saw was people saying, holy shit, the Timberwolves, that was a really good way of navigating your way in another good player when you are completely capped out and totally fucked economically.
Yeah, so that's what I see that as two sides of the same coin, right? The Timberwolves are like, we need a rookie that's going to be able to do what we think they can do now, because...
Which is odd, because I don't think necessarily this guy is that. Mm. Not compared to say, the guy that the Lakers got, who is exactly the kind of ready-made shooter that they need to put around LeBron and AD with JJ Redick.
So the flip side is, say the Spurs find their second guy next year, or they trade for their second guy. If they're paying Wemby and another guy max contracts in 2031, well, that's when you need another high draft pick to replenish your low-cost talent stock.
It does feel like getting a little bit ahead of yourself worrying about your strategy for getting players in 2031 compared to your strategy for getting players in 2025. But I thought the most on-brand move of the draft, even more than the Lakers drafting, you know, the proprietor's junior, the Lance Stroll of NBA basketball. It was great that Lance Stroll and Bronny James both got their deals on the same day. I thought that was a great touch. But even more on brand for any team was that the Spurs went and drafted the young Spanish point guard.
Yeah.
He was exactly the guy who you're like, oh, that guy has Spurs coming out his ass. The next Ricky Rubio.
Do you reckon that that's more on brand, or the Thunder drafting a guy that can't play next year because he's got a torn ACL?
See, I think they need to lose that habit because they do need guys who can play.
Yeah.
Given that they trucked off your man Joshua Giddey because they told everyone he wouldn't come off the bench, which was kind of shitty. I don't think that was necessary. Just say, you know, go well. We thought it would work out. It didn't. You don't need to hurl him under the buses on his way out of town.
It actually might have done him. It might have done him a favor though, because then it sets expectations up at Chicago, right? Like, he's not coming here to be a second banana. He wants.
Well, there are no other bananas in the fruit shop. He has to be first banana.
That's right.
It looks like, you know. Sometimes if there's like been cyclones in North Queensland and you go to the banana section in Woolworths, there's like fuck all. That's how many bananas that Chicago have. They are bananaless.
Yeah, so I think he'll get plenty of opportunity. Maybe not. I was going to say he might be able to get him to a 10 seed if he plays really well. Just looking at the bottom of the, because the Nets are going to suck. The Raptors are going to suck. I guess the Hornets could be better. The Wizards are basically out on everybody.
Well, they traded Denny Avdija to Portland for not much.
The Pistons could suck for the next decade. So, like, you might be able to fall into that 9-10 spot in the East just by accident.
Well, the Bulls already were there. I mean, they played in the play-in. That's their level. And they played in that play-in game the last couple of years running. So
I thought the Hawks did really well in that DeJounte Murray trade.
It depends what they want to do. I mean, Trae Young's Luka's age, yeah?
Yes, correct. Same draft.
Do you feel like this trade, I mean, what they traded DeJounte Murray, who has been, you know, the nominal number two to Trae Young since they've got him from off the Spurs. And the suggestion was that they might trade him back to the Spurs and get their own picks back for that logic that we were talking about before, the idea that get your own picks back so at least someone else isn't profiting if you suck. But they sent him to the Pelicans for Dyson Daniels, who I feel sorry for. There was one other player involved, wasn't there? And a couple of future firsts.
Two firsts, the Lakers first next year.
A couple of future firsts, pretty good pick.
And I think a Milwaukee pick and I'm trying to think Larry Nance Jr.
Larry Nance Jr., yeah. So I was trying to figure out who it was.
So, like.
But does this feel like the point of this trade is to get stuff to make another trade later? It doesn't feel like this is the end point of this trade. Because if it is, then you guys are tanking? Rebuilding? You're kind of not really ready for a rebuild.
No. I do think Daniels is a much, like, I know why they got Murray, but Daniels is a secondary playmaker who's a really good defender wing. Like, whereas Murray actually wants the ball, right? He actually wants the ball. And Daniels can playmake, but he doesn't have to. He's quite happy just being a kick-ass defender. Like, I actually think that's a much better stylistic fit.
It's almost like they, you know, because they had Patty Mills there last year. That's almost like, well, we need him, but back when he was good. Hence, they've gone for Dyson Daniels because he's got that kind of scrappy terrier defense. He got the ability to play make, but that's not really what he does.
And then, I don't know, but four Frenchmen in the draft? Like, okay, that's interesting.
Le draft, c'est le merde!
The guy that went to Charlotte, they reckon, is an absolute maniac. just want, like, I was so shocked that the Heat didn't trade to try and get him because he sounds like such a Heat player, like, cuts hard.
No, it's just like the Heat kind of did a Heat check on themselves, didn't they? Because they drafted a guy who's, you know, allegedly doesn't really like basketball or doesn't really have much of a motor and all that kind of stuff, kind of like the anti-Homie Harkes kind of thing. So maybe they're just trying to test how good are we at this.
Yeah, that's
and if right. this works, we could probably teach Carl Towns to be a basketball player.
Mm. Yeah, there does seem like a lot of teams where, you know, if they have a bad first half of the season and they're staring at that second apron hard cap where you're just absolutely screwed and there's nothing that you can do, which is essentially what the Spurs also bet on, you know, they're betting on that the Timberwolves are going to be dysfunctional because, you know, they still don't have an owner and they're going to get dragged through the court and Anthony Edwards could just get the shits and one out. Like, that's another bet that they're taking, which is not a bad bet. Like,
I don't think anything...
The Timberwolves have only been competent 1 year.
Yeah, I don't think anything that happens off the court matters to that team. I don't think any of the ownership stuff matters a pinch of shit.
As long as Edwards is happy.
Like, your players don't care whether your board has paid the fucking registration fee to get you in this tournament. They don't give a shit. They just want to play.
Only because I don't tell them about that stuff, but sure. Yeah.
So, and do you think Anthony Edwards is reading the fucking sports business pages on fucking on The Athletic? Do you think Anthony Edwards reads?
I think there would be a cadre of players that do that, but not him, no.
It doesn't fucking matter. They're going to get their money. And sports assholes love an excuse to come up with a nobody believes in us, you know, everyone's against us kind of shit. This could be exactly the kind of bullshit that they could confect a narrative. The key thing is they've kept Finchie around for extra years. That's all that really matters. The stuff that happens to the actual team doesn't matter a pinch of shit. Proprietor, the governor of the team, does not matter. Kyrie Irving played basketball for one of Israel's most prominent supporters. Again, we know what his attitudes to Israel are. Yeah. Admittedly, he didn't play particularly well at the end, but he played pretty well going up to that point.
And then I guess the only other two tidbits was, where's Paul George going to end up? And
well, yeah, that's interesting because Warriors seem to have come in late as a, like, they're really keen to turn Chris Paul into Paul George somehow, probably through Paul, if they can just kind of get rid of the Chris bit and add a George bit. Obviously, that requires the Clippers consenting to it in some way, which means the Clippers are going to extract something from them.
Well,
but that seems to be their aim. Because they are also banging their head against that cap, they need to find a way to turn Chris Paul's salary slot into something more useful. Potentially a Paul George and some enough money given to Clay that he will perhaps stick around. Because if they do get Paul George in the building, if they do manage to execute that, it will make the Clay Thompson negotiation real simple. They'll have to say, like, here's the number. That's as high as we can go, and it's not our fault. You know, we love you. Whereas if that doesn't happen, then he'll know that whatever number they give them isn't what they can do, it's what they want to do. And that's where the hurt feelings come in.
Well, that was the other little tidbit thrown out today, that the Mavericks have offered Clay a contract.
Was that the problem?
Yeah, I don't know.
Was the lack of a Clay Thompson the problem in that side?
I don't. Like, I could see Clay going and playing somewhere and having an awesome season next year in a much reduced role and just, you know, maybe he does need a change of scenery.
You could also see him having the Tony Parker in Charlotte year, which we have all forgotten.
And it being really sad and yeah, you just don't want to see it. The Clippers asked the Nuggets for Michael Porter Jr.
They can have KCP.
One of their good young guys and, like, three draft picks. And the Nuggets just said, yeah, no. I don't know if you've seen
how many. I think the Clippers have a really – Clippers are going to be really difficult to negotiate with because they have a massively elevated idea of how good their players are because they put those players together. Yeah. It is interesting how the Nuggets are the only responsible team because, I mean
– Isn't he a complete free agent, though? Can't he just walk into cap space? Because that's Philly's attraction, isn't it?
No one's been talking about Clay to Philly. It's been interesting. It's only ever been...
No, I mean Paul George.
Oh, yeah, Paul George can. Yeah. But it depends if he opts in, which we'll know by the time this podcast gets played to anybody. If he opts in, it's almost certainly going to be a trade.
Yeah. And then the only other one I thought might be if LeBron really had, you know, a sense of comedic timing, he should sign somewhere else after the Lakers signed his son. A little bit like what he did to Miami. You remember when he tweeted out that he, like, really liked this kid in the draft? And then so Miami drafted him. See you later.
Look, As someone who has sons who have no particular employable skills, I would also be trying to find a way to make sure they've got a career. So I don't think he's going to do anything at all to fuck with that.
Yeah.
He's got it's worked out. And the kid had a fucking cardiac arrest. I think people should maybe give him a little bit of leeway to see what kind of basketball player he could come back as. Because he was good, and then his heart stopped. Like Jay Wally from Frenzel Rom. They were good, and then Jay's heart stopped, and then they weren't quite as good anymore. Sorry, Frenzel.
Surely if he can play with any, like play well with anyone and have a connection with anyone on the court, it's the dude he's been playing pickup with all his life.
Yeah, but your dad never fucking goes easy on you in pickup. So he's been getting clowned and yammed on his entire life. Yeah, so I don't think you ever get better doing that. You just get more and more frustrated. Look, as I said, it was a big day for nepotism when Bronny and Lance Stroll both got deals sorted out. But nepotism is the fucking underpinnings of the United States judiciary, government, business, everything. I mean, if no one's complaining about Jim Dolan, no one's complaining about fucking Josh Kroenke, it's only LeBron James's kid who seems to be copping all this shit.
Yeah, which is the same, you know, the Zach Lowe theory of don't complain about player salaries. It's like, who do you want the money going to? Players or rich billionaires?
Yes. Oh. Feeling sorry for rich billionaires because of the second apron seems like, oh, no, the Nuggets will have to, you know, he'll have to make do without KCP. It's like, yeah, good on you. It was interesting, though, that the Nuggets called their shot so early on that with the GM kind of saying,
he's gone.
Yeah, if he doesn't come back, we'll be all right.
Well, it's going to actually make front office talent more valuable again. It seemed like when everyone caught up with Maury's tricks, you know, like he sort of nabbed some of the low-hanging fruit that was out there when there was a whole bunch of really incompetent GMs. And now you've got a whole bunch of competent GMs, right? No one seems to be particularly bad at their job. Like even the Wizards, right? The Wizards did a smart thing. got rid of a player that was valuable but wasn't really going to help them in the next 3 years. And got good value for him and actually sent him to a place where he'd actually be a little bit more useful. Like, that's just standard smart front office stuff.
But are you talking about front office talent or are you talking about front office social skills? Because really the talent there is the ability to convince your owner of something.
True, true. That's
because it's
true.
Not about – I mean, these are not negotiating with KCP for another deal is the easy thing to do. Convincing Josh Kroenke, assuming he wanted to bring him back, this is what is going to happen.
Yeah. Well, they always want to bring him back, right? Because they always want
to
win.
The pressure is going to come from ownership to the GMs to say, you need to cut salary.
And I don't know if you read Howard Beck's piece today, but like, I think I'm relatively into the nerdy side of the NBA and holy shit.
Which means you're in favor of owners over players because that's what that means. It means treating players like...
No.
Assets.
That's not necessarily you fucking nerds. The case. But it's really fucking complicated. And like you said, if you've got a half absent owner or someone that doesn't necessarily, I don't want to look at a fucking spreadsheet, mate. I just want to be good. So go and sign that guy. And it's like, yeah, but that has consequences down the track.
You don't need to worry about that. I mean, Tim Connolly trading a pick in 2031. He'll be in fucking Spain in 2031. He'll be sitting on a beach.
Yeah, that's all right.
Fuck does he care? Yeah. I think you'd be better off playing for an owner who didn't know and didn't care and just wanted to be good. Because the owner that is constantly saying, no, we're not going into the tax, save me money, makes your job a lot fucking harder than the owner that just says, fuck it, push the chips in, let's have a crack, and we'll, you know, if we suck, we suck. I'll have sold the team by then.
Or probably the most dangerous owner is the owner that says that, but also then wants to make personnel decisions.
Yes.
Like Wiseman instead of, or DeAndre Ayton instead of Luka.
I think those owners either learn or leave because Vivek hasn't fucked about trying to bring his Silicon Valley genius into the equation for a very long time.
That was one where when there was whispers that Mike Brown's seat was sort of untenable and everyone was like, oh, man, the Kangs are going to start Kangsing again. And then they're like, no, here's another 3 years. And it's like, oh, you're acting like a reputable NBA franchise. Very good. Anyway, it was an interesting without being a firecracker draft, I think.
It wasn't interesting. None of us know how any of these players are going to be. You know, what was interesting was that how much was said about stuff that people don't know anything about. I was listening to some of the draft podcasts, and depending on who you were listening to, you were either hearing that Zach Edey, who went 9 to the Grizzlies, who's a big, tall, stiff, who plays old school, big, tall, stiff, white guy basketball. He was really good in college. He was a college player of the year. He went to the Grizzlies, who have had a history of having guys like that, Stephen Adams, Jonas Valanciunas. Depending on whether you're listening to Jonathan Givony or Christian Peake, whoever else, he was either not even worthy of a second round pick, or he should have been picked in the top six, depending on whether you value college basketball and that shit or not. It's very clear that his shit will not work as currently constructed in the NBA. It's whether he can make a step and do something different. He was getting comparisons to fucking Hashim Thabeet by some people. These people who massively overvalue, you know, the kind of the stiff, tall guy kind of skill set. And you think the whole fucking draft narrative is built on total fucking fabrication. It's total projection by people who can't reach consensus on a single fucking thing. It is a waste of time every year. Let's see how they play.
The only thing with him, though, that's interesting is he ran more than anybody in a college season. Like, that dude plays, like, every minute of every game and runs his fucking, like...
Yeah, but he's not quick. Sort of, that's the problem.
He's not
quick. He can run because he has to do that to keep up with everyone's walking.
Yeah, but I wonder whether he's going to have a little bit of that turn-and-go Jokic style. Like, Jokic, no one ever says Jokic is quick, to be particularly not down the floor, but the amount of times he can beat a guy down the floor simply because he doesn't...
But Jokic can pass and shoot, which is stuff that Zach Edey can't do.
Yeah, that's true.
See, this is the thing that all he's good at is the old school. You know, in 1995, he would have been the first number one pick, but we're not there anymore. So the people who see the upside are either falling in love with the college production or they believe that he can develop the two-man game and the pick-and-roll game and all that kind of shit.
Mm, yep. Anyway, he looks like a big guy and they do like hard screens for their guards at Memphis. It's like one of those, the personnel change and shit just stays the same.
Yeah.
Sort of built into that.
It's built
into the fabric there.
Yeah, it's fucking etched into the walls there.
Mm.
You got anything else?
Nah, let's come back and talk some tunes, I reckon.
You want to talk about what a complete waste of time Afghanistan were? Either Bangladesh or Australia would have made that a game. The fucking Afghanistan women's team might have made that a game. Get the fuck out of this competition until you've got a women's team.
We might have to play the Indian women team versus the Indian men's team in the final. Yeah, it's uncomfortable when you want the Saffas to win a final, that's all I'll say.
Why not?
Yeah, I guess they're not quite the dislikable team that they were in the past.
They're not a bunch of large round Springbok props.
Yeah.
I don't get why we're still hating South Africa. This is not your granddad South Africa.
One of the interesting correlations might be, though, that they punted, you know, what, 3 years ago, they punted a fair chunk of their test summer to play their version of the Big Bash.
It wasn't that recently. They punted this test summer. They sent over a B team to New Zealand and lost a lot of friends in New Zealand. Their T20, unlike the Australia and New Zealand T20s, is open to private ownership. So a lot of the teams are owned by subcontinental IPL interests, shall we say. Mm. There's a fucking, there'll be a Knight Riders team in there, you can guarantee it. Because they were so busted ass broke, they need this to work. So, you know, I understand, but they have doubled down on T20 and turns out it seems to be going all right for them. They're still going to lose to India because they've read the script.
Yeah, that's right. Protect the income.
Yes.
The only problem with T20 World Cups is, like, there's one and then there's another one and then there's another one and then there's another one. It's a little bit like Big Bashes there. It's hard to get too excited by that.
Well, they are the international version of that. You know, when it's on, it's like, oh, that's interesting. And then when you realise that they've held the two semi-finals and you didn't notice, it's like, oh, okay, good. I guess that was important.
I think I might be a lot more interested if the Euros weren't on. I've been watching much more football than cricket.
If it was the only thing on, sure. But it's a good idea for them to wrap this shit up and get out the way because the Euros, the Copa America, Tour de France rolls out tomorrow morning.
Mm. And we should get moving. Let's come back and talk some tunes.
Let's do that. This has been the Bulls Podcast. I'm Doc. He's Bezo. I'll catch you later.
See ya. Friendship is rare.